Hi and welcome back. This is episode number 260, and today I am joined by Mads Singers of madsingers.com. Mads is a management consultant, he is a trainer, and he also outsources as well. He has an outsourcing operation down in Davao in the Philippines, if you're interested. I had a really good conversation with Mads about how to motivate staffing, how to run remote teams, how to get the best out of your outsourcing operation as well. So I learned a lot, really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm sure you will too. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/260. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff, and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA or go to our website and we will have links there. Hi and welcome back. Today we have Mads Singers, who runs a management consulting firm, and I've been really excited to talk to him for some time now. Hi, Mads. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Derek?
Fantastic. And so I hear you're in the UK now, but spend a lot of your time in the Philippines.
Yeah, definitely. I've been in the UK for a few months, mostly because there's been a lot of conferences around SEO and e-commerce here that I've been speaking at. But most of my time is spent in Asia, so primarily split up between Philippines, Vietnam, and Thailand.
Fantastic. And I'm really kind of into your angle and the services that you offer, because you're into management coaching, also management consulting, and then you also weave that into, outsourcing. And I also, you know, because we are like an outsourcing advisory, see so much overlap in all of those services. And so it'd be great to explore that with you, because we're all here to get the best out of our businesses, optimize all the processes, and of course the core to that is, you know, making our teams perform as well as they're able to. So would love your insight on that. I suppose to start, do you want to just introduce exactly what Mads Singers is, the management consulting service?
Sure. So just brief sort of, my background was originally in large corporations. I worked first at Xerox and then at IBM, and was doing a lot of, like, particularly the last 5 years, a lot of outsourcing, right? So with IBM, IBM would go in and take over hundreds and maybe thousands of people sometimes, and basically outsource the work to themselves, right? And that was what I was doing for quite a while. Now, that was very much a stepping stone into what I do today. So towards the end of my career with IBM, I basically started coaching people, initially primarily sort of other corporate managers. But as soon as I left IBM, I really got into the environment of these online entrepreneurs and, you know, smaller business owners. And the joy in actually helping and coaching people in that situation is just so much bigger than working with corporate. So that's pretty much what I've been doing the last 6-7 years or so. And basically, the core focus for me is really help, like, small and mid-sized business owners manage their staff better, right? A lot of people, they start an online business and, you know, suddenly they look around and they have 15, 20 people sitting around them, but they've never actually got any background or any experience in how to manage, and they just kind of do it the best they know, right? So I've helped a large number of businesses basically become a lot more effective at the management piece, which again significantly helps them
grow and scale, right? Because a lot of the time it is the sort of lack of efficiency and building teams, and there is sort of a natural progression. Like you can get to a certain size without having much understanding and even without managing that well. But at some point your business kind of stops growing because you don't have sort of the right management systems and you don't have the right way to handle people. And that's really what I focus on a lot. And then on the back of that, as you mentioned, I mean, basically I run an outsourcing business as well, which focus primarily on providing high quality labor, right? We actually help with the management of some of that. So basically our client can just focus on like what the person should be doing and how they should be doing it, right? So we try and take care of some of all the soft skills because again, our realization was that most of our clients aren't very good at that. So yeah, that's what I do.
So when you talk about management coaching, do you focus primarily on the people, empowering the people, the communication, or do you dive into process mapping, process management, KPIs and metrics? What's your angle?
My focus is generally the people aspect because that's where I feel most people struggle, and that's where I feel there's probably the biggest lack of, let's call it training or understanding material in that term, right? And I mean, to be honest, I touch on pretty much anything. I touch a lot on financials. We touch a lot of different aspects depending on what people need. But obviously, my sort of main focus is really around the people aspect. And I spend a lot of time sort of on behavior models, understanding how business owners can see how people are different, like how different staff are good at different things and so on. So that's generally a lot of my focus, and that's generally what my clients love.
And so, without giving away the secret sauce, what are some of the home runs with that? Because I imagine a lot of the people stuff, especially when you're dealing with online entrepreneurs, the remote workers, the digital nomads, they might be a little bit steely. And if you come to them with a lot of soft skills and maybe intangible skill sets, do they sometimes kind of resist or push back? Do you have sort of certain tools or practices that are easy home wins?
So again, just like I help entrepreneurs figure out how their people work, I'm very good at figuring out people's personality and how to best get them to do things that are beneficial, right? Now, in the end of the day, there's always like any human beings have some kind of resistance to change, right? But really, my focus is always trying to change mindset. Rather than say, do this, do this, do this, my focus is very much helping people how to look at things, right? So one of the, I can take a couple of the sort of home runs, but one of the big ones is sort of actually building relationship with your staff and like having frequent one-to-one sessions. And a lot of the time before I speak to people, they see it as sort of a waste of time. Whereas really when they learn to understand the value of building the relationships, and it's not just, hey, I'm the boss, you should be doing whatever I tell you. And I always use the same example, but basically if you phone up a couple of friends, right, and you're like, hey, can you help me move tomorrow or next weekend or whenever, like if they're gonna help depends on how good a friend they are, right? And it's the same in business. Like it's not about building friendships, but it's about building relationships. If your staff don't respect you, if they don't have a good relationship with you, they're going to be a million times less likely to actually go that extra step to do what it takes to make the business a success, right? So having those great relationships and actually listening to your people and so on is really critical. And reality is most business owners don't do a lot of management, right? They're often so focused on doing things themselves that they aren't managing, which is what really slows the business down.
Yeah, and I sort of have an observation about people, athletes in sports, and you get these triathletes that train maybe up to 40 hours a week. They're swimming, they're cycling, and they're doing all of this for free, and they're putting their body through incredible stress and pressure, and they're doing this for free, and the only motivation is because they want to do it for themselves and they want to get over the finish line. And it's incredible how if people are motivated, the things that they will do, And you can get some highly paid people within organizations, and if they're not motivated, they will do the bare minimum, and they will do it maybe as poorly as possibly as possible. And it's there's such a difference, isn't there? If someone's motivated and they really understand the mission and want to get there themselves, it's the difference in light and dark.
Totally, totally. And the one thing I would say, I have a very clear life philosophy, which is from a management standpoint at least, which is very much that people don't generally show up to do a bad job. Like no one actually shows up to work and say, I want to do a bad job today, right? But what happens is when you aren't motivated, you end up doing a bad job because you aren't really bothered about the details. You don't really care what happens. But no one physically shows up and say, I want to do a really bad job, right? Like at least I've never met them. So the whole thing is like as a business owner or as a manager for any number of people, right? Your core responsibility is really to figure out how do I trigger these people? How do I get them to deliver their best consistently, right?
And something that is maybe significant in terms of the demography that you work with, and I'm assuming this, but I spoke to Mark Webster of Authority Hacker in a previous episode, and he's in this world of online entrepreneurs, remote workers, co-working, and digital nomads. And for many listeners, I think for people in that world, it is just all they know. But for many listeners, it is so foreign to them that you can create an organization that spans the globe. Maybe you've never met these people, and your entire kind of relationship is based on text over Slack or something. Do you deal a lot with those people, and how do you sort of find that managing in that situation is different to managing in a traditional environment?
Yeah, so actually, Mark is one of my clients, or have been at least. So,
Right.
yeah, I mean, a lot of people I work with are online entrepreneurs, right? And one of the first questions I love asking to sort of understand where they are is really specifically if, like, how frequently do you talk with your staff, right? Like, not just write with them on Skype, but how frequently do you have voice video conversations with them? Right. And honestly, like I work with people that I've had people employed for them for multiple years and they've never even seen a picture of them.
Right.
Right. And like all communication have been through text message on Skype. Right. And that is a little bit scary. Like I'm not saying it will never work, but I'm just saying the opportunity they have to get more out of that individual is, yeah, I don't even know what word to use. Chimungus to make up one.
And you
Like
think
it.
there the sort of the major win is just by having a human connection, then they're more immediately aligned to the mission and the values and what you're chasing after.
That in itself gives a lot, right? I think it's just as much the value of actually like getting to know those people. And because very often what happens is when people have worked for someone for that long, what tend to happen and what normally happens in those situations is that they're sitting doing either very repetitive work or maybe very basic work compared to what they could be doing, right? So people hire them to do a basic job, but one of the key things when you hire staff is you always want to keep growing their skill set so they have a higher and higher and higher value to your organization. Because if you hire people and have them do the same thing over and over again for years and years, like if they don't increase the value of what they do, then you aren't growing the company as fast, right? So it's always about looking at how can I improve the value of the output value of the people working with me, right?
And I see that, especially with people building outsourced teams, they see it very much as an external function of their business, and those people are external people to their business. And I encourage people just to consider outsourcing as any other kind of employment, and to get the best out of your employees, it's about bringing them on board with the culture and the direction of the country of the company. And sort of in line with that is people look at outsourcing and remote teams, I think, more as doing the grunt work, the highly repetitive stuff, Whereas again, I try and encourage people that actually, you know, the Philippines or remote workers have incredible potential for leadership, expertise, to be strategists and really lead your company forward. So do you think it's just, you know, people assume that like outsourced staffing is really just for grunt work, or is it just that they don't necessarily believe in the processes that can build a team up to something greater than that?
I think it's a mix. I totally agree with you. I mean, we've people that have worked with our clients now for years, and they literally run their business. Like we have Amazon FBA businesses being run and being grown solely by Filipinos, right? So they definitely can, right? The challenge is often when people sit far away and they're not paid as much money, people have this tendency to take them a little bit less serious. And that's such a shame, because it's a great way to start to build a really good team. And you can get, I mean, I definitely personally have Filipinos that provide a ton more value than any locals I ever hired back in Europe, for example, right? So there's definitely plenty of potential. But the challenge is, because they don't build the relationship, because they consider them, I mean, I honestly, I hate the term virtual assistants, but I use it because people understand it. Reality is that it's an employee. I mean, if someone sits in Ohio or Chicago or Philippines, like for me, it makes no difference, right? Like I'm always trying to optimize what that person can do for the company and how they can contribute. And that's how you build great people, right? You get them to contribute and make a difference. And that's when they learn and they grow. And the more they do that, like the better they become as people, and the more they contribute, the better the world is, right? And realistically, we honestly don't make much money from the outsourcing work. Like the key thing for me with the outsourcing business is really helping build sort of local Filipinos who are very very strong business minded and so on, right? Because the Philippines need that. I mean, they definitely benefit tremendously from that sort of skill set, right? But really looking at it from a high level standpoint, like a lot of small business owners who are starting out, who don't have a ton of money, it's a great way to build a team. And if you build them well and manage them well, they can really make a substantial difference to your business and to the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Just coming back to an earlier point, your point on virtual assistants, and you know, I try and resist calling people virtual assistants as well, but it's such a common phrase now. And, you know, people kind of boast that they maybe have 20 or 30 virtual assistants. And I'm probably like, if you break that down, you probably actually have people in marketing, you have customer service people, you have sales people, you have content people, you know, call them that, because it kind of adds a lot of value to their function as opposed to them just being all grouped into virtual assistants. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you suggest that people successfully build a team so that they can delegate and also start producing high-value outputs?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
So a couple of things that I generally look at, right? So number one is I basically have sort of three areas to look at from a delegation standpoint, right? So if you're a business owner
and you're looking to start building a team, there's three things to look at. And those three things in my mind is, what's the stuff you hate doing, right? And the reason is, if there's stuff you hate doing, you're generally not being very effective at. If you can find people who love doing some of the things you hate doing, that can make you and your business substantially more successful, right? So that's a good place to start. The second thing is things that take up a big chunk of your time. So again, ideally, if it is repeatable, that's a good place to start. But generally, things that takes up, like if you have a certain type of work that takes up 40, 50, 60% of your time, again, that's a good place to hire, because you can have one person probably doing that full time and adding a lot of value to that, right? And the last thing is really looking at things that aren't necessarily as valuable, but still have to happen. So sometimes in businesses, you know, there is things that just are less valuable for the business. And as a business owner, if you keep sitting doing them, you're not doing more valuable stuff. So offloading those can also be very beneficial, right? So that's basically the three areas that I would start looking at. And then obviously when you do a first hire, I generally recommend to hire people full time to start. And I do that very specifically because I think when you start trying to bring in people for a few hours and so on, you spend a lot of time and the output you get is not necessarily that big. Whereas if you hire people full time, you get a full resource, and you know they're fully part of your company. They're not looking for other jobs to sustain their income and so on, right? So I generally recommend hiring full time, right? So when you look for your first hire, I'm then also very, very keen on making sure it's a hire with the right personality for the specific task that they're expected to do. So frequently I see people hire staff, and it's not often, it's not because the staff doesn't want to do a good job, but like naturally some people are naturally significantly better with numbers and things like Excel, whereas other people are much better when it comes to communicating and better like working with people and so on, right? So really figuring out the right personality and knowing up front what's the personality you're looking for this job really for me makes a big difference. And that's one of the key things that I really train all my students on is really to learn how to do that effectively, because it does make such a huge difference in the long run.
Yeah, I think in the Philippines as well, it's a little bit exacerbated. People that are maybe coders are really not good communicators as a rule. And I think people really fall down if they provide or if they require too many generalist skills. And I assume you see that as well. There's a lot of job creep in terms of people wanting, you know, one person to do a little bit of content, a little bit of coding, a little bit of WordPress updating, and also a few sales roles. Do you have any sort of advice in terms of the early stage founders that are looking for their first staff that they also expect to be a sort of entrepreneurial generalist?
Yeah, I'll say generally, if you're hiring in the Philippines, you won't find a lot of sort of entrepreneurial people in general. That have its benefits and disadvantages, but Filipinos by nature, probably because lack of financial capacity, etc. If you ask most people, would you prefer having $100 every single month in your salary or the potential of a $500 bonus? A lot of them would pick the safe bet and get 100 extra, right? Which is very, like most Western people would do it the other way around, but they are so keen on stable jobs, stable income, etc., because it's critical in a different way than it is in the Western world. Like most people, it's not a matter of do I eat or do I not eat. It's more a matter of, oh, can I buy a new car or can I not, right? So whereas in the Philippines, for a lot of people, it is a question, if I have a job, I can eat, kind of thing. So that makes them sort of slightly they look at risk in a very different way than we do in the Western world, right? Mm-hmm. Which too, honestly, is also sometimes a good thing. I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs fear that people start working with them and then run away with their business idea and start it up themselves. And like, honestly, I've never seen it happen in the Philippines. But I'd say from a business owners are looking at finding staff, and 100% agree, a lot of people want a lot of things, right? And that's exactly why I said I sort of want to make sure people sit down and see what's the type of personality I want to do this stuff, and then don't mix it too much. You're spot on. Coders in the Philippines are not good communicators, but honestly, the best coders anywhere are not good communicators. Mm. They might be slightly better, but they're generally not great communicators, right? Which is often why you have all these, in pretty much any large organization, you have all these communication problems between marketing and sales and the rest of the company, right? It's because the level of communication and so on is just very, very different between organizations like that, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's horses for courses, isn't it? And like a sports team, it's about getting the right people into the right roles, isn't it? And then people can excel. And I really do think about the Philippines as well. They, you know, much more so than I think kind of the millennials in the West, where they're taught to innovate. They all want to be entrepreneurs and they all want to be the business owner within about 2 weeks of starting a job. Yet in the Philippines, people are very eager just to kind of do a role, know the role, and get it done properly. They're very diligent, they're very detail-oriented, and something that I think millennials in the West would kind of roll their eyes at within about a week of starting a job. So the two character traits can actually complement each other well, and you can really build a very strong business with that.
Yeah, totally agree with that.
And so in terms of management, there's obviously the personality traits, there's the communication channels. Do you focus a lot, you know, and especially with the online economy, do you focus much in terms of tools or how people build these teams and management processes efficiently online?
So on tools specifically, right? Like, so the most common tools is, if communication tools will often be like Skype and Slack and Zoom and things like that. You have project management tools, which would often be like Trello and Asana, Basecamp, etc. And then you have this sort of process documentation tools, which again, there's a whole heap of. Generally, my philosophy is pretty simple. The tool doesn't matter very much. What matters is that if you say it should be used, it's being used. Most people spend so much time trying to find the best tool, and reality is it doesn't matter. What does matter, though, is that when you actually pick a tool and when you say at this company we use this tool, that it's actually being used. Because so many companies, so many businesses start with the right intentions, and some people are using it, some are not, and that kills the company. Right, like if it kills the effectiveness, at least, because if some people are using tools and some aren't, like it just ends up being super, super ineffective.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And where do you stand then? Because there's the community is relatively polarized in terms of when you're building a team, one option is to provide incredible detail, have SOPs for everything, write down the processes, everything's mapped, there's a rule for everything, you know, following the kind of e-myth guidelines versus empowering people, expecting them to act professionally and know what they're doing and to be able to train themselves if they don't, and, you know, kind of a kind of free love sort of environment. Where do you lean in terms of the highly controlled versus high levels of freedom?
I sit somewhere in the middle. I do believe the thing is, when people have knowledge in a business and they leave, you generally have a problem.
Mm.
Right? So I believe not documenting the knowledge that's already existing in an organization is a risk. Now, the way I generally work with it is basically, like, I recommend to people that they always, when they give someone responsibility, so let's say you hire someone new to do your customer service, right? I would work with them. I'd say, hey, here's what we do today. Here's our existing processes. I love you. I trust you. I think you have great communication skills. I want you to take over the ownership for our customer service. and I want you to do the best you can in that job. Now, this is what we do today. I'm sure there's things that could be done better, and I want you to own that. So I want you to be responsible for this document, aka our processes, and I want you to update that when you feel it can be done better in different ways. Right? So I like, for me, that there's a big difference between giving people a job and a task and saying, hey, here's a task, go and execute this process, versus giving someone the ownership of a process and giving someone the ownership of an area and saying, hey, we have this process. And the reason why that's a good idea is because, I mean, there's no point in them making all the same 100 mistakes that the person before them made. So the benefit of being able to sort of learn from previous experience is beneficial to any organization. But you want them to have ownership, and you want them to be able to change things where it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I think people that are too reliant and dependent on SOPs, for one thing, it completely disempowers all of the people that are beholden to those SOPs, but also the SOPs can get outdated so quickly and become irrelevant. And if you have too many, then it's a huge ring binder full of documents that no one ever refers to anyway. Yet, as you say, there's a little bit of vulnerability and exposure if nothing is written down. So it's always a fine balance, I think, isn't it?
I think, again, like majority of organizations don't have a good system for making sure SOPs are up to date.
Mm.
And the thing is, if you document a whole bunch of processes and you spend like 3 months documenting everything you do and then never update it, that's a waste of 3 months. So for me, it's just as important building a great system and framework about how to update it, who updates it, and how frequently, right? So like generally what I suggest is that there's always sort of a 3 monthly checkpoint for any process. And where I look at things very different than most is that I always believe it should be the person at the end of the line who's responsible for updating them. Mm-hmm. So if it's the customer service processes, they should be updated by the customer service team. Now, the manager of that team will still need to sign them off, but it's the team's responsibility, or it's the person designated in the team's responsibility, to make sure they are getting updated. Because where a lot of these process updates stops is in companies where it's the manager who's responsible for updating them, and suddenly the manager manages 800 different processes, and they're obviously never going to have the time to update them.
Mm. And you don't, SOPs are designed from above, then there's not the management, there's not the buy-in from the users, and it's probably not relevant to the users anyway, is it? So there's it's a difficult thing, isn't it? But I mean, there are experts in that field that really vouch for it, so I'm sure there's value in it. Onboarding.
It's a bit of a mix.
It's
a bit of a mix, because some processes, like particularly when you look at higher level company stuff, such as like staff onboarding processes and the likes, like it's good for some of those for sure to be developed from above, from a vision and so on standpoint. So I definitely see it in both ways. I would say like for a lot of business owners, because they do everything in the beginning in most cases, it makes sense for them to develop processes in the beginning. Mm. However, one of the key things where people really end up tripping is that they feel to do anything in the company, they need to go do it, they need to learn it, and then they delegate. Mm. And I can promise you one thing, the CEO of IBM doesn't learn every task and then write down how to do them, right? And neither do you want to be if you want to grow and develop a big company. So while you do it in the beginning, when you're employee number one, that's okay. But when you're starting building a team, it's important to have the owners and the developers of future processes underneath you.
Absolutely. And this ties into what I think is a critical subject, certainly for the success and also for the initial anticipation of outsourcing with new clients. It's the onboarding process. I find if people are small, they're startups, they're maybe, you know, hiring their first employee, and about to outsource, then they don't really have the processes. They're not used to delegating. If you're dealing with a medium-sized company, maybe with 10 or 20 people, and they're about to outsource, then they kind of, they're doing the operations, but they don't really have it outside of their head, and it's not really process mapped, so it's hard to transfer across. And then if it's a bigger company, then there is the friction and concern that once it's transferred over to an outsourcing environment, that it's not going to be translated so well, and the outputs will change. How do you generally assure people and help people with a successful onboarding? Because I'm sure you know you experience as well with any outsourcing new projects that it is the critical moment. People have to get an early win. People have to get assurance that this outsourcing thing really works. What's your approach with that?
Yeah, actually nowadays, because we often support a lot with the management of things, we don't actually have that many issues with that anymore. It definitely used to be a big thing, but nowadays it's a lot less of an issue. Like we have, as an example, we have a lot of e-commerce businesses, for example, that come to us and like, hey, we need to do this chat thing. We need to be available 24/7. We can't afford to. It doesn't make financial sense to hire that in the US. So we want to do it as outsourced. And it's actually like we haven't actually struggled that much with it. But I think, again, having a good framework for working with clients, or if you are a client hiring an outsourced company or outsourced individuals, like really making sure you have a good framework to set up for how to actually do the learning process and how to actually do the, say, what is it we need, document what needs to be documented, and then doing frequent follow-ups. One of the things we do see pretty consistently is when people do training, they show someone and they say, this is what you should do, this is what you should do, this is what you should do, now go do it. So one of the magical steps that I've always found is the fact that when you teach people how to do something, you should always watch them do it first before you let them go do it by themselves, unless it's something really simple, but if it's something more complex. Because the challenge is very often, if there's something they're fundamentally misunderstood, sometimes they might end up with the right result, aka you're like, oh yeah, that one was done right, you must get it now. Whereas if you don't understand their process thinking and if you don't understand how they go about it, you won't actually realize if they understood it or not. So usually the process that we use is you first show them, then you check what, like you actually watch them do it, and that could be a screen share or whatever, and sort of have them talk through what they're doing and why they're doing it. Because that way in the beginning, you can often catch if there's any issues with the understanding of the task or the anything like that. And then you let them go. And then you still want to do some checks once in a while. But yeah, so that's generally how I would look at it from a delegation standpoint, right?
Yeah, and it probably loops around to what we first spoke about, which is really just communication, isn't it? You know, just spend time with people, especially at the start, especially as you're onboarding, especially as you're sort of introducing them to complex tasks, and then check in with them, and then check in with them again, because it doesn't take too long, but I think people don't realize that maybe the first month is critical, and invest the time, but then it will, you know, pay off in bucketfuls after that.
One big thing that I generally see is that, like, I want to give people quick wins. Like, I always ask people this, and most people have had a day job, right? And I'm always asking the same question, which is, how did you feel the first day you walked into a new job? Right? And if you've ever done that and you think back and you're like, wow, that was overwhelming. I didn't really know anyone. I didn't know what to do. Now, try imagine starting a new job with someone that you've never met in person, someone far away in a different culture, in a different place. Like, you don't know where anything are. You don't know the share drive. You don't know and understand the document. And even, like, very often business owners are like, oh, yeah, I shared you our Google Drive. And you're like, yeah, that was 6 billion documents. Like, what am I supposed to do with that, right? Mm-hmm. And very often people don't understand what is it like to start a new job. And it's really important to think about, and particularly in terms of the support and sort of the communication early phases, I really try and always get people early wins, because you want to boost their confidence and boost their belief in their ability. So actually giving them, at least initially, something that's a little bit easier, so that they can say, wow, I did it. I feel like I can do this work, right? That often pays off big time, because they feel much more competent and they feel like they have the skill set, and they get less afraid with the future tasks.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I think, with an outsourcing relationship, I think the client is worried that things won't work out and they need assurances quick and they're not sure how to manage it. But equally, the staff member is equally as concerned, and they're worried about the future of their job and the opportunities. It's kind of a nervous time for both, isn't it? And it's just so important to kind of get it off to the right start from the start.
Yeah, for sure.
So Mads of madsingers.com, thank you so much. That's incredible insight. If people want to know any more about your coaching or your outsourcing, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, madsingers.com is a great place to start. Our outsourcing business is called aristosourcing.com in one word. And again, I'm on all the social channels. Might not be me answering, but at least my profile exists on Facebook and LinkedIn and email, mass@masssingers.com, etc. So plenty of options.
Fantastic. And we'll put all of that in the show notes. Thanks, Mads.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that was Mads Singers of madsingers.com. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/260. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.